This episode is brought to you by Aquarium Gardens, the world-class aquascaping and planted aquarium specialist store based in the UK. Welcome to the George Farmer Podcast. I'm your host.
And I'm your co-host, Emma Farmer.
And we're now in season two, episode three, and today's episode is a deep dive into aquarium plants and how to use them in your aquascaping. But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about some housekeeping stuff. So the book, Emma, that is your job, the book. You are managing the book.
I'm managing the book. So great news. We've sold out of the second batch, which is absolutely fabulous. So massive thanks to everybody for their support. And also a massive thanks to everybody for their patience. We had the double whammy of the COVID challenges plus the Brexit and customs. And that proved very challenging and quite difficult. And it did elongate the timescale. So really massive thanks to everybody that knew they had the book on the way and were patient until it arrived. And we've also got a few that are still in flight. But the next batch will be with us in hopefully mid to end of April. So you can still purchase your books ahead of that time and have the dedications via the website.
Yeah, so that's georgefarmerstudios.com/book. I'll leave a link to that in the show notes. You can also still order the book through regular bookstores, so Amazon, Barnes and Noble, etc. But if you want to support us directly, then please do consider ordering from our website, and then you do have the option, like Emma said, to have it signed and also have any dedication that you want written inside. We've had some very interesting dedications, haven't we?
We have, yes, lots of interesting paragraphs that George has had to.
French, some in German. So it's all good fun.
Yeah.
General updates at home, we're still running the aquariums, all the Iwazi aquariums and the Dua Pallida 30. They're all looking really great. The discus tank in particular is looking amazing. It's coming up to 4 months old now since we set it up, and it's just getting better and better. So super happy with that. And I am planning on filming and releasing a very comprehensive deep dive video very soon on the discus tank. So that's exciting. Also very exciting news, and this is an exclusive public announcement. We are going to be producing a high-end and professional quality series of live streams from Tropica in Denmark. It's called Tropica Live, and every month we're going to be doing a highly produced aquascaping workshop live on YouTube. Lots more details coming on that soon, but I just wanted to give you guys a bit of a sneak preview on that. Super excited by this one. Lots of work, lots of investment in terms of time, energy and money going into this project, so it's a really exciting one. Okay, so moving into the main topic of today's podcast, aquarium plants and how we can use them in our aquascapes.
So let's start with the basics then, George. So why keep plants at all in the fish tank? So why not just have the fish or the stones or the rock or plastic plants even?
Yeah, that's a great question. So aquarium plants provide several benefits to the aquarium system. They photosynthesize, which means they use light and CO2 to create oxygen, which benefits the fish, the shrimp, the snails and the bacteria, so it benefits the whole system. They add a sense of security and shelter to the livestock as well, so it's going to encourage more natural behavior, potentially breeding behavior. They also help prevent algae or algae. So algae is one of the main reasons people give up the hobby. So if we can educate people into how to successfully keep a planted aquarium, more than likely they're going to have the skills to be able to manage any algae issues, which is really important. And last but not least, aquarium plants look absolutely beautiful. They're quite unique in that they grow, they evolve, they develop, and as an aquascaper we have a sense of control over how that happens. So we can trim the plants appropriately, we can use different types of plants in different positions to create a different kind of layout, a different aesthetic. If we compare that to a hardscape only layout or a plastic plant layout, you know, once that's been set up, that's it. It's a static aesthetic. There's no room for real kind of evolution or, you know, aesthetic development. So, you know, for that reason, aquarium plants and their ability to, like I said, grow and evolve offers a unique kind of creative experience for the fish keeper.
And I guess we've delved deeper into how to care and maintain plants in season one podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. So if folk haven't listened to season one yet, if they look at in particular episodes 5, 6, 7 and 8, I think we covered CO2, lighting, liquid fertilisers and substrate. So that's all of the kind of methods on actually how to keep your plants healthy. We also covered off plant maintenance as well in season one. So I do encourage listeners, if they haven't listened to season one yet, then they can get a broader understanding of the actual science behind aquarium plants. This season is very much to do with the aesthetics, i.e. the aquascaping with aquarium plants.
Okay, and so with that in mind, George, so can you talk to us about how to position the plants in the aquascape? Are there some general rules of thumb that people can follow?
Absolutely, yes. I try to keep it really quite straightforward. So I divide the plants into four main categories. So foreground, midground, background, and then epiphytes. So foreground plants, these are obviously plants that sit in your foreground, midground, midground, and then background, obviously your background plants. Epiphyte plants are plants that we attach to our decor or hardscape. Now, it's really important to understand how large that plant could grow to. So you might need to do some research. I recommend the Tropica Aquarium Plants website, tropica.com. And you'll have a complete database of all of their available plant species. I think there's about 140 to date, and it will have their kind of eventual potential size there. So that's a good indicator. You can also just gain inspiration from seeing other people's aquascapes, what species they've used, where they've used it, and get an idea of what might work for you. But it is important to understand the limitations of your own aquarium size. So if you have a nano tank, for instance, you're probably not going to be putting massive Amazon swords in there. Equally, if you have a huge 6-foot discus tank, you probably don't want to just be putting, you know, a tiny piece of hair grass in there and expecting it to look, you know, impactful. So, you know, it is massively a case of choosing the right plants for the right situation. Also, with that in mind, we also have to ensure that your aquarium system is capable of growing those aquarium plants. So if we look at when you actually buy the aquarium plant, in particular from Tropica, these are labelled with three categories: easy, medium and advanced. So easy plants, these will generally do well potentially without CO2 injection, lower levels of lighting, lower levels of nutrition. And medium category is kind of, you probably will need CO2 injection, a bit more light, more nutrition. And then advanced plants, you know, you definitely need high levels of lighting, lots of CO2 and lots of nutrition. So just choose the plants not only to fit in with your aesthetic, but also to fit in with your system in terms of, can it actually physically grow that plant? So it's really important to do a little bit of research. And my advice is actually just to start off with easy plants. You know, the vast majority of plants that we use, Emma, in our tanks at home, for clients' tanks, is probably 80 or 90% are in the easy category.
But do you still have a lot of choice? So how many different species are in that category of easy plants?
Absolutely. Tropica, probably around 2/3 of their complete plant list are in the easy category.
Which is how many?
Well, there's about 140 altogether. And there's probably about 80 or so in the easy category. So there's plenty to choose from. And I love easy plants because they're easy, most people can achieve success with them. But even in a high energy system, you know, with strong lighting, CO2 injection, lots of circulation, you know, good liquid fertilizers, good soil, etc., you can grow easy plants, but they just have even more success with them. They just thrive even more. And you know, the vast majority of aquascapes I create, like I said, are dominated by the easy plants. You know, Java ferns, Anubias, Crips, Bucophyllandra, easy stem plants like Rotala, Ludwigia, Hygrophila, even easy carpeting plants like Eleocharis parvula, you know, dwarf hair grass. You know, all of these are still absolutely beautiful plants, but they're easy to grow. And that's why I often recommend them for beginners. And I use them myself because you have much more room for error with them. You know, you don't have to be pummeling them with loads of light, loads of CO2. You know, the more light you're using, the more kind of risk you have of algae, the faster everything's growing, the more maintenance you have to carry out, more water changes, more liquid fertilizers. So if you just kind of dial everything back a little bit, maybe use a little bit less light than you normally would, you know, less liquid fertilizer, not even necessarily injecting CO2, although I always do recommend CO2. just consider using the easier species, and you're going to enjoy it. You're going to enjoy your hobby more if you succeed with those plants.
And then build up as you get more experience.
Yeah, and you know,
if
people,
need be.
Yeah, people do like to experiment. You know, people do have a bit of a collectoritis thing going on. You know, it's an exciting hobby. There's loads of different plant species out there to choose from. You know, tropica have about 140, but commonly available in the hobby, there's anything from 200 to 300 species commonly available. So by all means, you know, experiment, have fun, try different plants out. Don't be afraid to try a species that you've never heard of. You might have success with it. It might be brilliant. You might fail, but through failure, you learn, and you know, you're not going to use that plant again, potentially. So it's all good fun. And that's really important to note. You know, we're having fun with these plants.
Okay, so talk to us about the different plant groups. So I'm a beginner, there's lots of choice out there, but from the perspective of the plant groups, help me understand what they are, and then how do I use them when I'm styling my aquascape?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So we can split the plants not only in terms of where they go in the aquascape, i.e. the foreground, mid-ground, background, or attached to the hardscape as an epiphyte, but we have the different kind of growing characteristics of the plant. So we have carpeting plants, stem plants, rosette plants, rhizome plants, or epiphyte plants is another name for rhizome plants, bulbs, and floating plants. So if we start off with carpeting plants, you've seen these before, Emma, in our aquascapes at home, often a lush, dense carpet of a carpeting species. So these are plants that will send up a leaf, a plant, and then underneath the soil or the substrate, it'll send a runner, and it'll send a new plant up. And this process happens over and over again until after a few weeks or so, depending on your system, the size of the tank and the energy levels that you're running, you could potentially achieve a full carpet in a matter of a few weeks. And, you know, this carpeting plants used to be regarded as like, you know, you've achieved real success with your planted tank or your aquascape if you could grow a carpeting plant. Because the nature of carpeting plants means that they are generally more demanding. And that's there's a few reasons for that. They're furthest away from the light source because they're right at the bottom of the tank. So they're going to, you know, not getting as much light as potentially other plants in the aquarium. They're usually getting less circulation and CO2 because of their position in the bottom of the aquarium. So for this reason, you know, they can be quite challenging. And if you think about the more advanced species, so things like Hemianthus calitricoides cuba, this is regarded as an advanced plant, you know, you do really need to focus on your CO2 and circulation to ensure that that plant is getting enough food and obviously enough light to make sure that light is penetrating all the way down to that carpet. So yeah, carpeting plants, beautiful, but they are generally a little bit more tricky than other plant species, but very, very popular in aquascaping and great to create this kind of lush, dense, vibrant feel to an aquascape. Moving on to stem plants. These are very popular, some very, very easy, fast-growing weeds, things like Limnophila sessiflora, Hygrophila siamensis 53B, Ludwigia palustris, you know, all of these actually regarded as aquatic weeds in nature. But we keep them in our aquarium because they look beautiful, but they have the benefit of actually growing really fast. And what that means is the faster a plant's growing, the more nutrients it's using and the more kind of defense it has against algae. So I always recommend at least a proportion of fast-growing weeds or stem plants, especially at the beginning of the aquascape's life, where algae is a lot more risky. So ideally, you want to be planting around about a half of that aquascape with fast-growing weeds to start with. And then over time, you can gradually kind of replace those fast-growing weeds with something a bit more kind of long-term sustainable species. So that's something to bear in mind. You can get demanding stems as well that don't grow so quickly. There's some beautiful red stem plants. There's so many different textures, different sizes. You know, stem plants are a really great way to introduce, you know, a whole new level of texture and colour to your aquascape. You know, some of the most beautiful aquascapes have a really kind of dense bushes of these stems, which are really well trimmed, almost like topiary, you know, like you see with the fancy bushes being trimmed, etc. And that's actually an art in itself, is trimming stem plants. And we did talk about that in season one in the maintenance episode.
Have you got some examples of the names of those stems that you typically would use?
Yeah, so the fast growing weeds, I did say Limnophila sessiflora, Ludwigia palustris, and some Rotala rotundifolia is a good one. If you, I'm going to refer to the Tropica website again, if you look under the easy category, you can filter your search results by, you know, easy, medium, advanced category, and then you can see a really big selection of fast growing weeds there. So yeah, stem plants, brilliant, lush, beautiful colours, beautiful textures. They are high maintenance. That's the only kind of downside for me. You know, running multiple aquariums, you know, I have to be mindful of how I spend my time and energy. So I tend to avoid heavy use of stem plants these days because they are relatively high maintenance. But for beginners, especially if you're only running one or two tanks, then absolutely recommend stem plants. Always really good to kind of hone your trimming skills as well. Okay, so moving on to rosette plants. These are plants that grow from a central kind of rootstock, and the plants kind of protrude from this centre area, hence the name rosette. Classic species would be Echinodorus or Amazon swords, Cryptocoryne, and there's other plants like Lagenendra as well, although that's actually regarded as a rhizome plant, but very similar to a rosette plant. And they tend to be lower maintenance. They don't tend to carpet. They don't tend to send out so many runners and send out, you know, new plants. So they don't tend to take over your aquarium like a carpeting plant potentially could, or they don't tend to get so kind of bushy and dense like a stem plant can. So I like rosette plants because they tend to be lower maintenance. They tend to be slower growers, more sustainable. And my favourite rosette plants, as you probably know, Emma, are crypts.
Oh, yes.
And there's probably around a dozen or so really commonly available species, ranging in size from the smallest, like the Cryptocoryne parva, which we have in the foreground of the discus tank right now. You know, that will only grow sort of 2 inches or 5 centimeters tall maximum. And then we have, you know, all the way up to, you know, the Tropica Cryptocoryne wenditii, which is a kind of a classic mid-ground plant that we've got in the discus tank. And then you have super big background crypts, things like Cryptocoryne eustriana or Cryptocoryne crispatula. And these will easily grow 60 centimetres plus, 2 feet plus, perfect background plant for huge tanks. So rosette plants are probably one of my favourite plant groups. And then we have rhizome plants, or I often call these epiphyte plants. These are plants that will grow from a rhizome. So the rhizome is the fleshy portion of the plant, which the leaves grow from. And these are often species that need to be attached to our hardscape. So classic rhizome or epiphyte species would include Microsorum terupus or Java fern, Anubius, and all of the varieties and the species of Anubius, Bucaphalandra or Bucaphalandra, depending on how you want to say it, Bulbitis or African water fern. All these are classic rhizome or epiphyte plants that need to be attached to the decor. And the reason for that, Emma, is the rhizome itself, that needs to be exposed to oxygen and circulating water. If that rhizome is buried in the substrate or the soil, then that rhizome becomes what we call anoxic, which means it lacks oxygen, and that will cause it to die, basically. Mm. So that's why we need to attach our plants to the decor. And in nature, you know, we can always observe nature and how best to do our aquascaping. And in nature, these rhizome plants you'll see growing literally, you know, attached to the rocks or the wood in fast flowing streams or rivers, yeah, etc. Okay, moving on to bulb plants. So these are, like the name suggests, these grow from a large bulb. Classic species would include Nymphaea, Lotus, Aponogeton species. These all grow from bulbs as well.
Tiger lotus,
that's the African lotus. Yeah, the Nymphaea lotus there. Crinums as well, they grow from bulbs. And these tend to be relatively low maintenance, a bit like the rosette. They only grow from that single point. They potentially can grow runners as well. The really interesting thing about a bulb is that a lot of the kind of nutrient store is in that bulb. And it's actually really important not to bury the bulb too deep. What I like to do is when you look at the bulb, there's usually a kind of fresh, hopefully some fresh plant growth on that bulb. It might not necessarily be a complete plant specimen, but you should be able to see some new growth. So make sure that new growth is uppermost, and then just gently kind of push in the bulb into your soil, just so that new growth is exposed to the water column, and then you should see new growth quite soon. Bulbs tend to be quite easy, non-demanding species as well. And tend to grow quite big bulbs as well. So, you know, if you've got a larger aquarium, then you might want to consider some bulb species, maybe not so much if you're keeping a nano tank. Another plant group which is really important to consider is the floating plants. So these are perfect for new aquascapes in particular, where, and again, algae is very prominent. These help to block out some of the light, which helps to reduce the risk of algae. But they also grow super fast because they're nearest the light source. They've got unlimited access to CO2 in the air as well. The combination of that high light and that CO2 just allows them to grow very, very quickly. You normally have dangling roots that go into the water. These roots will produce oxygen, which is obviously great for the whole kind of functionality of the aquarium. The fish like to sometimes use the roots for breeding behaviours potentially as well. And another great thing about floating plants is that they're one of the first plants to show up any nutrient deficiencies. Because they're the fastest growing, potentially your aquarium is going to be low on nutrients, then you'll start to see the pale kind of yellow growth normally on the floating plants first, because they're the fastest growers. So we call these a kind of indicator plant for that reason. Common species of floating plants, Amazon frogbit or Limnobium navigatum is the scientific name. And one of my favourites is the Salvinia auriculata, which has a relatively small leaf size, and the roots are relatively short as well, so they don't overtake the kind of aesthetic. With Amazon frogbit, much larger leaves and really potentially long roots that can go all the way down to the substrate. This can actually look really effective depending on the kind of aesthetic you want for your aquascape. And the final plant group that I want to mention is moss. I absolutely love mosses, and these can really add an instant kind of a mature effect to the aquascape. You know, when mosses kind of bring about this sense of maturity, this kind of ancient woodland kind of feeling, and for that reason I do love to use mosses. There's dozens of different species available. I like to stick with like the easy classics, you know, Christmas moss, Java moss, Phoenix moss, which is relatively advanced. Another name, the scientific name for Phoenix moss is Physidens fontanus. Lots of different mosses to choose from. And top tip for when you're preparing your moss and when you're attaching it to your wood or your rocks is to either use a tiny amount of gel type super glue, or what I like to do is, depending on the hardscape material, you can actually wedge the moss in between the nooks and the crannies, and you can also tie it on with string as well. And there's a few other different methods for attaching moss, but they're kind of the common go-to methods that I like to use. But mosses tend to be relatively easy. They're quite slow growing, so quite low maintenance. Although interestingly, most mosses sink when you trim them. So when you're maintaining your moss, important to keep them well trimmed to promote compact and lush growth. But what happens is when you do trim, those offcuts generally fall down, and then they can kind of take over elsewhere in the aquascape, which can be a good thing, depending on what you want. But what you can do, what I've done before, is actually had a kind of a small hose attached to some self-sprung scissors, and then literally cable tied to the scissors. And then whilst I'm trimming the moss, I'm simultaneously siphoning the water.
Hoovering it up,
literally, as I'm trimming. So that's a top tip for the listeners out there.
And what approach, George, would you recommend to people who want to design a planting layout? So where would we start?
Yes, a great question. First of all, get some inspiration. You know, that's what I would suggest. So hundreds and thousands of beautiful aquascapes online, freely available. And you can get broad ideas of what plants look good where. And, you know, would they be suitable in your own system? You know, is the aquarium size similar? Is it running a similar kind of methodology? You know, do I have similar lighting to that guy? Do I have the similar CO2 setup, fertilizers? you know, is that whole system kind of compatible with mine? So what you don't want to do is see this amazing aquascape and think, I'm going to copy that, or, you know, be inspired by that and use some elements of that aquascape in my home aquascape, but then further down the line realize that you don't have enough light, you know, you don't have a CO2 injection kit, or you don't have a plant friendly substrate. So, you know, if you are on the, if you are at the beginning of your journey and you don't necessarily have the budget for a high-end system, then set your expectations realistically. Don't, you know, expect to get these super high-end results right away. Start off with the easiest plants, you know, relatively simple compositions, achieve success that way, get confidence, and then as you get more confidence and you enjoy the hobby more, you might be willing to invest a bit more, you know, into the hobby, upgrade your kit gradually, and then start, you know, getting into these kind of more high level aquascapes. But I would definitely, you know, look at the internet, look at books, you know, there's obviously my book, look at any books from Takashi Amano. Also recommend Karen Randall's Sunken Gardens is a good step-by-step kind of book as well. If anything, it's actually a little bit overwhelming these days, you know, with Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, you know, the internet in general. I think if you type in aquascaping now on Google, there's, you know, 15 million results, literally. So it is quite tricky to nail down, you know, a single source of inspiration. What I like to do, or what I like to recommend to beginners, is follow a handful of folk, not religiously, but rather than kind of spreading your attention far and wide and just dipping your toe slightly into different kind of styles of aquascapes, figure out someone that you really like their style and you kind of know and respect them and they talk a lot of sense, you know, they're speaking with credibility and experience, kind of follow their, you know, their guidelines, their aesthetic, and then you're going to be more kind of likely to succeed. In terms of actually how to design the layout itself, let's say you don't necessarily want to copy or be inspired by anyone in particular, you want to do something completely from scratch, you can use inspiration from outside. You know, we're lucky to live in a rural area where we go through dog walks in the woods, you know, we live by a river as well, you know, and often I'll see just a little clump of grass with a rock and I'll just be like quite inspired by that real kind of simple thing. So just keep your eyes open, be observant, be curious. When you're walking outside in the nature, or you're even watching a documentary on nature on TV, or, you know, you're reading a magazine on gardening, you know, all these things can kind of influence, you know, what inspires you and actually how you can transfer that inspiration into the aquarium space. Some people like to draw sketches. Some people keep like a scrapbook, you know, like a Pinterest board. Of different ideas. It's really hard for me to kind of specifically recommend how one person can design a layout, but yeah, use inspiration from other people and use inspiration from nature. It is a top tip.
And I guess be mindful of the size, the colour, the textures and the demands of the plants as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So the next step after becoming inspired, you know, I want to create this aquascape, is actually to look in the look a little bit more into the details of the aquascape. You know, make sure the plants are compatible with your aquarium, not just in terms of how big they grow, but the demands. You know, do you have enough light? Do you have CO2? Do you have the right soil, fertilizers, etc.? That's kind of like the practicalities of planning the layout. But actually, from an aesthetic point of view, you're right, Emma. We need to look at the size of the plant. We need to look at the colors, the textures. You know, are they compatible? So, for instance, let's say you wanted to have a colourful aquarium where you wanted to use, you know, a couple of different red plants. You probably wouldn't have all of your red plants all in one corner, extreme corner of the tank, mm-hmm. because red by the nature is a high impact colour. Your eye is immediately drawn to that. And so if, for instance, all the red plants are over to the extreme left hand side of the tank, your eye is going to be drawn over to the left and you're going to kind of miss out on the other part of the aquascape. So this is where compositional guidelines come in, and we talked about this in more detail in season one. But think about the rule of thirds, the golden ratio. You know, if you're using high impact focal points plants, you know, then just simply put them, you know, a third of the way along or two thirds of the way along into the aquascape. If you're using big textured plants, you know, broad texture plants like Amazon swords, you know, these suit bigger aquariums. You know, the larger the texture the plant, the bigger aquarium, it sounds quite sort of logical, the bigger aquarium that they suit. Conversely, if you have a tiny nano aquarium, you want to be using really kind of small, fine textured plants to enhance that sense of scale. And then we can also think about, you know, what plants look good next to each other. Does that texture and that colour, you know, suit that plant that's next to it, or do they kind of clash? You know, and you'll kind of you'll get a sense, you'll get your own kind of sensitivity to this as you practice more and more and more, and you look at more and more aquascapes online or in books. And you know, someone that's been in this hobby for almost 20 years, you know, every day I will be looking at literally hundreds of aquascapes, and I'm still learning, you know, all of the time, just by almost osmosis, just by physically kind of analysing an aquascape. It's for me now, it's almost like a second language. It's really interesting.
And George, you talked about putting all the sort of reds in a cluster in the left-hand side of the tank, and maybe that's not quite the way to go. But are there any other hints and tips like that you can share? Learnings that you've had, or you know, things not to do that would be helpful?
Be mindful of textures, you know, and colour. We talked about the rule of thirds. Put high impact colour kind of, you know, a third of the way along, or two, or even in the centre of the tank, if depending on the style of aquascape. Don't put high impact colours or textures to extremes left or right of the tank, because that's just going to draw your eye. Be mindful of stem plants where the lower portions of the plant can tend to look a bit unhealthy because they're kind of lacking light. So a top tip is actually to hide, is to not hide necessarily, plant your stem plants behind hardscape.
Okay, so layering them.
Yeah,
almost.
Layering. So a kind of classic beginner kind of tactic is to have a foreground carpet of plants. Great, well done, you've got a carpet of plants. But then they'll put huge long stem plants directly behind that short carpet. So you have you going suddenly from this really beautiful, lush, short lawn, suddenly to this relatively, you know, ugly, tall stem plant. And what happens with a lot of stem plants is because the lower portions are lacking light, so you often get poor growth or even dropping leaves on that lower portion of the stem. So a top tip is to plant those stems behind an appropriately sized aquarium plant or hardscape. Another top tip is just to kind of have fun almost. You know, for real beginners, what I often recommend, and aquarium gardens offer this service, is to actually buy a plant pack. And it's almost like a lucky dip of, you know, foreground, midground, background plants. And the beginner will put all of these plants, you know, potentially in one go in their aquarium, and then just see what works. So see what works in terms of, do the plants actually grow, you know, survive and grow? And then secondly, how do they look? You know, what plant looks good next to what plant? What plant looks good positioned towards the centre, you know, the left or the right? And the beginner can just kind of experiment. They can learn, you know, learn on the go. And that's another really interesting tip is to, you know, some people really enjoy that planning process and getting everything absolutely right, getting that perfect shopping list, the perfect plant list, the perfect plan, and implementing it. That's great. But actually, what I'd like to encourage beginners to do is just go for it. You know, invest in, you know, an appropriate system to start with. Buy an easy pack of beginner plants, you know, from aquarium gardens, for instance, and just have fun with it. You know, the good thing about aquarium gardens as well is that they actually hold all of their aquarium plants in mini hydroponic systems. So the plants are actually growing in the store just as they are in the greenhouses. They're in very similar conditions. And so you're going to be guaranteed, you know, a fresh, high quality plant, even if it's been in the store for 3 months. You know, when you eventually buy that plant, it's actually been growing in the aquarium gardens.
Yes, it's still healthy.
Months.
Yeah.
So it's going to be bigger actually than when you potentially buy it directly from, you know, fresh from the nursery. Another great thing about aquarium gardens is that they'll offer you online or telephone consultations. So you can phone up Dave, the owner. We know Dave is a good friend of ours. He came to our wedding. You know, he is passionate about aquarium plants and the hobby and aquascaping, and you know, I overhear him so many times on calls to customers, giving them, he'll be on a call for half an hour sometimes, giving them advice, and sometimes their customer won't even buy anything, you know. But Dave is so passionate, and you know, the proof is in the pudding, Emma. You've been in the store. I think they've got 10 10 absolutely stunning display aquascapes.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, all the products that they stock are products that they believe in, you know, and they use themselves. And it's just such a lovely experience going in there. You know, beautiful displays, knowledgeable, friendly, enthusiastic staff. They're always willing to help. The hardscape selection is second to none. They've got a whole room dedicated to hardscape. They've got 3 aquascaping dojos where people can, obviously not at the moment with COVID, but when things open up again, people can go and play around and try before they buy, you know, these different size dojos to suit any aquarium size. And, you know, aquarium gardens even offer, you know, a hardscape service where they'll actually create a whole hardscape layout for you, and then they'll come up with a planting plan for you.
It's
amazing, you know. So, you know, Aquarium Gardens are sponsoring this particular episode, and, you know, they were the ideal choice because, you know, I've got a great relationship with them. They're just down the road. They're a great store. They've got great plants. They've got great hardscape and great knowledge. So, you know, what's not to love?
Yeah, and massively, massively support the hobby, which is
key. The number one thing for us. Yeah. So if you want to find out more information about Aquarium Gardens, I'll leave a link to their store in the show notes. Also follow them on Instagram. They've recently reached over 100,000 followers. So that's, you know, a reflection of their skill and talents. And yeah, they've got a YouTube channel as well. So I'll leave links to all those in the description. And yeah, thanks to Aquarium Gardens for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so let's fast forward then. So you've planted the tank and everything's going well. How do you maintain that beautiful aquascape?
Yeah, that's a good question. We did have a complete episode dedicated to aquarium maintenance, but in terms of the plants themselves, that is definitely worth diving a bit deeper into. So plants obviously grow, and they grow at different rates. So fast-growing weeds, you know, the sort of Ludwigia stems and Rotalas, Limnophila sessiflora, which is a classic, these can potentially grow, you know, an inch plus every day.
Mm.
And so this is absolutely, you know, absolutely necessary to trim these plants, maintain them. And stem plants is a very simple case of just trimming the stem, you know, where you need to. And then the interesting thing about when you trim a stem plant is wherever you've trimmed from, generally speaking on the stem, the nodes, which is the point of where the leaves protrude from, where you trimmed that stem, you will get 2 new shoots from the nodes underneath where that trim point is. So you can create the deliberately like bushy effects by continually trimming the plant. And then you can replant the offcuts, and this is how you propagate the plant. And it is really important that if you discard of any offcuts, that you must get rid of them in a responsible manner. Never let them enter any natural waterways. Do you remember when we watched, was it Country File last night? It was a program we watched on TV last night, and they had that hydrocotyl plant, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that's a great example. So this hydrocotyl, I think it's Leucococcophala, pennywort is the common name,
mm-hmm.
is actually a North American, native to North America, but the UK introduced it as an ornamental plant, and then it accidentally got let into some natural waterways, and now it's you know, regarded as a real pest throughout the country, and you know, it's responsible for causing quite a lot of habitat loss, etc. So this, for this reason, it's really important to discard of your plants appropriately. Put them in, maybe in the compost, give them away, replant them, but absolutely avoid any risk of them getting into any natural waterways. So that's how we can maintain stem plants. Floating plants is very simple. We just scoop off any excess plant matter, and again, dispose of responsibly or give away to a friend or whatever. Maintaining rosette plants is very easy. We just get the leaf and we literally peel it away from the rootstock. So what I'd like to do with the Amazon swords in particular, and the crypts that we've got, is I'll get the leaf that I want to get rid of. And it's always like the oldest, ugliest leaf that I get rid of on rosette plants. So it's normally got a bit of algae on there. It might be looking a bit deformed. It's just not looking its best. So what I'll do is I'll grab that leaf in my hand, and then I'll run my hand all the way down to the bottom of the leaf where it reaches the substrate. And then you can actually kind of put your finger and thumb right in between the bottom of the leaf and pull it away quite sharply from the rootstock. And then that's that leaf gone, and that's going to generate new leaf growth.
Okay.
And you continually repeat that process with the oldest and the ugliest leaves, and you kind of you just kind of always refreshing that plant Similar thing with rosette, with rhizome plants. So with Java ferns, for instance, it's a really good idea during your water change process is to kind of just get your hand and just kind of, you know, wave around that Java fern, stroke the leaves. It's going to lift off any detritus, any excess organic waste that's kind of settled among the plant. And then just kind of inspect the Java fern, have a look for any leaves that might be dying off. Often they'll go like a brown colour, they'll go like a light brown or translucent brown colour. And exactly the same process as the rosette plant removal. Just run your hand to the bottom of that leaf where it reaches the rhizome, and then just like a firm tug, pull that leaf away from the rhizome, and that's going to generate new leaf growth as well. And this is something that you need to keep on top of. You know, preventative maintenance is always better than corrective maintenance. So just, I always do this kind of process as part of the water, you know, just during the water change process. So just keeping those plants as well maintained as possible. And it's little and often as well. You know, don't let your aquascape go into a massive jungly chaotic mess and then, you know, decide to spend like all day maintaining it. Always better to spend, you know, an hour a week or so rather than, you know, 10 hours every month is a really good, you know, little and often is always better than large week, you know, large overhauls.
Okay, George, so quiz time. Keen to know if you really do know your plants as well as you say you do. I'm sure you do. But in the back of your book, you've got the plant list, and they're in their categories, and also if they're easy, medium or advanced. So I'm going to read out five, and this is going to be challenging because obviously they're all Latin names here, and I need you to tell me the category of the type of plant it is and then the category. Are you up for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
I will start with Elatine hydropipa.
Elatine hydropipa.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, that is a carpeting species and it is in the advanced category.
Correct. Well done, George. the next one, Gratiola viscidula.
Gratiola viscidula.
That's right, yeah.
That is a medium stem plant.
Correct. Well done. And number three is
Nymphaea lotus.
Yes.
Medium bulb.
Correct. Okay.
Next.
And, oh, okay. Getting confident now.
Oh, I did write the book, Emma.
Yeah. Oh, right. Fair point. Fair point. Now some of these I know you'll know, so I'm trying to go for the ones that are a little bit that I've never heard of, but then if I haven't heard of them I can't pronounce them.
I'll just do your best. I'm sure I can help you.
Balisnera nana.
That is easy, and it is, well, it's actually a background plant, but
just answer the question, George.
It's a rosette.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a weird one because it's actually carpeting as well in a way because it sends out runners.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah.
Okay, super. And the next one
yeah.
is Hitotina.
Hitonia.
Yeah, correct. Palustris.
Palustris.
Yes.
Hitonia palustris is a, ooh, it's a stem plant.
Yeah.
I think it's easy.
I think that you'll be right.
Yeah, it's actually. I think it should be classified medium.
Oh.
There's another one that I'm going to speak with Tropica about. It's the Hemianthus micranthemoides.
Yeah, all right. Don't get cocky.
That's actually classified as advanced, but I find it easy.
Mm.
So that's an interesting one.
Okay, all right. And then last one, Cardamine
lyrata. Yeah. Stem.
Yeah.
Oh, is it easy or medium? I've only ever used this plant once,
yeah.
And it was about 18 years ago.
Well, if you're an expert, you should know.
I'm going to say, I'm going to say medium.
Incorrect, it's easy.
Oh, no.
But on the whole, you did very well.
Well, I need to reclassify that as medium
because
it isn't
disagree.
Easy. Interesting one about cardamine, it prefers cooler water.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay, guys, that wraps it up for today's episode. Really hope you enjoyed that deep dive into aquarium plants and how to use them in your aquascapes. It is a massive topic and it is all subjective. you know, what plant I like the look of, you know, you might not like the look of, or where I put that plant, you might not put it there. It is subjective, but there are some kind of basic rules and guidelines that you can follow. You know, so much great information out there. I do recommend joining the UK Aquatic Plant Society forum. I'll leave a link to that in the show notes. Some great experts on there, always happy to offer their advice. Some great journals, some great articles. I always recommend this over Facebook groups in particular. Nothing against Facebook groups, but I just find a forum, in particular the UK Aquatic Plant Society forum, is so well laid out in terms of searchability. And you can, you know, you can post questions in a specific area. So it's just really user-friendly and a real wealth of knowledge. You know, I've posted over 7,000 posts on there in my time. And there's some, yeah, some real gems and some real great information and inspirational content on there. Obviously, there's my book as well, if you want to find out some more kind of detailed information. The book does cover a lot of the topics that we talk about in these episodes in more detail. And, you know, if you do want to support us directly, then do please consider purchasing a signed copy, pre-ordering a signed copy from our website, which, again, I'll leave a link to in the show notes. Thanks to Emma, my co-host, as always.
Thank you, George.
And thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the George Farmer Podcast. You take care.
Keep on scaping.
Cheerio.